Hello and welcome to GFW Radio Podcast. I was trying so hard to come out and not sound sick, and that sounded pathetic. Does this sound worse than Garnet did, though? On Wanted Beers, or better?
No, it sounds better.
Better? Okay, I win. It's GFW Radio. This is our 100th podcast.
Woohoo!
Yay.
Thank you. I was waiting for that. Yay. And we're here with a very special guest today. Joining us for our 100th podcast is Brad Wardell.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah, we're all right.
We're sick
supposed
too.
To give
we're all
the,
sick.
The legitimate Yay.
Yay. If you don't know who Brad is, he is a CEO. Is that what your title is?
Yeah, that's
President,
what it is,
founder, big dude in charge of Stardock, who most recently put out Sins of a Solar Empire. We got Political Machine 2008 on the horizon.
Yep, and Galactic Civilizations Why the Iron Ores comes out later this month.
Right. We have at least one big Galsiv fan on the staff.
It's me.
It's Mr.
Yay.
Sean Malloy.
Yeah.
Oh, we should do our introductions.
Anthony.
Who are you in the bright green shirt?
Ryan Scott.
Anthony Gallegos.
Well, you, Brad, you don't have to introduce yourself. You're Brad.
Sean Elliott. I'm doing that for solidarity with you.
Thank you.
Like when everyone shaves their head when someone undergoes treatment.
And I am Sean Malloy.
By the way, Brad told me that he has the flu just like I do.
Yeah, we're here to get together to combine them into a single super flu.
Yeah, to wipe out all you punks. Yeah, he's sitting directly across from me, so there's this like whole wall here of like bad
the death,
germs.
The death wall.
The death wall. Yeah.
Doors are closed. It's kind of warm in here.
Yeah, it's warm in
Perfect
here. We're all breathing the same air. This would be great. Be carrying out bodies here by the end. Sean looks like he can't wait to leave. Sitting here, get me the fuck out of
here.
You're
like a total germaphobe, but I mean, considering you've been out for what, almost 2 weeks?
Yeah, almost 2 weeks.
But that's good. That means it's passed.
That's funny, man.
That's right.
It's at the end. Those germs are dead
it's
and
not
gone.
Even contagious.
All right.
Yeah, it's just like residue.
It's too late for you.
Yeah,
my son.
It is.
And I do want to thank Anthony for lending me his 7 volumes of The Walking Dead graphic novels, because that was about the only thing that my brain could handle while I was sick in bed. So
some heavy shit for
it
sick
is
times.
Really heavy shit. That's a good comic book recommendation. But it really was a little bit weird reading about a zombie apocalypse while I was fevered and half dead.
That's how it starts
for weeks.
Super food starts the zombie apocalypse.
Well, I did tell you guys before we started recording that I would be sleeping and sleeping in that horrible fevered like sweaty state, and then I'd wake up and think I'm going to read another chapter, and then I'd read it, and then I'd go back to sleep, and then like in my dreams, totally over and over to the point where like I thought I was going to have to stop reading it. In my dreams, it was the zombie apocalypse. But then not just in the dreams, but like the part of me was going like, okay, no, this is just a dream, so it's cool. That part was going like, okay, but there really is a zombie apocalypse, though. I'll stop dreaming about it, but man, there really is one, and that sucks.
It's going to kill your resale value on your home.
Probably kill the resale value on your comic books, too, which I like. Which have phlegm all over them, but
I know they're just going to add to the authenticity.
But thanks anyway.
Vault rules apply. You give them the booger master over here.
Yeah, if you have to do the comic book, when you do the whole whatever they do, the
touch
appraisal,
unless you be touched.
Yeah, mint condition definitely not the case anymore. And so, what else is going on? I haven't seen you guys in 2 weeks.
Just playing games.
Just
making a magazine.
Playing games and making a magazine. You've had 2 weeks to prepare for this. This is all you have to say.
Playing games, making a magazine. And reading about, I could tell you about Buzkashi.
What? We want to know what that is.
Is this something we're going to Google and be sorry that we did?
Actually, no, you'll be entertained and delighted to learn about Buzkashi. It's, it comes from basically Buzz is a goat and Kashi is bashing. And it's essentially a sport played in Central Asia that is allegedly inherited. None of it's like perfectly documented, but it's allegedly inherited from, when Genghis Khan's Mongol horde was dominating the region. And it basically consists of a bunch of rugged-ass horsemen. The way it's played now, like in Tajikistan and Dushanbe, they'll be wearing Soviet tanker helmets, the big leather-padded helmets. And they take a goat, they decapitate it, they soak it overnight in salt water, and then they throw it into the field. And this is like the equivalent of a ball. And all the horsemen, the rules of the game, there basically are no rules other than you have to grab the goat by a leg or by a scruff or something and get it across the field and into this sort of like gutter thing. And
there's head, you mean?
No, the body. The head's gone.
The head's gone.
They probably have that in Super.
So it's just a carcass.
Yeah, so you get the carcass. But the thing is that everyone is trying to do this. So, and if you get it, you can be stampeded, trampled. You can use your whips. It's okay. So people will try to whip each other and take off bits of their noses and ears. And it's like I was reading about all this, and well, a source that's like, I don't know, it's always open to contention. Ted Rall, he does these, you know, comic news reporting things, and he mixes them with travelogue books, but he's been like running this site called Stan Watch for like a decade now. He's just completely in love with the Central Asian Stan countries, and he goes there and he arranges trips with people. He actually got into Afghanistan in 2001. It's another story. But then, so I supplemented that with a bunch of other research. I'm like, there's no way. This is insane. People do not do this. It's just this crazy blood sport. And I looked it up, and sure enough, I mean, I found all these records like in the year that he went, the year prior to the one that he witnessed, like 20 people were killed and during the course of the week, and because it got super muddy. But what happens is basically you run up for it. You got to lean down. Imagine you're riding a horse, lean down and grab this heavy thing. And at the same time, that's when everyone else waits to charge you and whip the shit out of you and try to take it from you. But I just wanted to tell
people
about it.
What happens if you get it?
Then you have to run. Then you have to get, hopefully your horse keeps running and you get it through the goal.
I know, but what do you get for making a goal?
Like you win the total tally. I don't know how many rounds they'll do, like presumably quite a few, but then whoever has the high score at the end, there's like the third place. Usually the prizes are like carpets and stuff. You get a carpet or you might get a goat, and then the grand prize.
You get to choose?
I get a goat.
But the goat's worth more than the carpet, and the grand prize is a Volga sedan, you know, like this some old a Soviet era piece of shit car, which is actually worth a whole hell of a lot when you live in, especially in some rural part of Tajikistan.
Brad, you got a game that sounds just like this coming out, don't you?
What's that?
I don't know.
I wouldn't know.
There needs to be a game made of this.
It begs so many questions. It is so hard to render a headless goat, though. I mean, because the hair and all that sort of thing.
Because
it's like matted. About. It gets matted after a while. And then, of course, as you're throwing it around, you still want the legs to kind of flop around naturally, which requires a lot of
You'd want the physical deformation.
And this happens. Kids in the crowd will sometimes get a leg from the buzz, and they'll whip it around and play with it during the meet and stuff.
So the family weren't into sport. I like that.
Why did they bother decapitating it?
I don't know why they do that. That's weird. Maybe because it would be too much of a mess, you know, where... Well, originally, the rumor has it that it was during Khan's reign, it was bodies that was used. And this, the interesting thing...
Human
now,
bodies?
Yeah. People. But there's been this big resurgence in the sport because, you know, in Afghanistan, it was traditionally really big there, but the Taliban and stuff frowned upon it as this pre-Muslim activity, and they banned it. So it's come back after the Taliban's been deposed. And then likewise, when, you know, all these countries were part of the Soviet Union, when they're, you know, Soviet satellites, it was like similarly frowned upon. So after the fall of the Soviet Union as well, there's like this resurgence in, you know, what it's sort of like, you know, pre- national, you know, activities and stuff, even though they used to getting into too many complexities, but because they weren't all different countries like Uzbekistan and Tajikistan were a single country. But I bring it up because I think it's interesting, especially when, you know, you get to this point and you feel like you've heard about everything. You've heard something about every country in the world.
Yeah.
And then you look in your, like, I have my shower curtain's a map, and you look on that map and you're like, I don't know anything about this place. And then you go look it up, and there's something good there.
Your shower curtain's
on
the map.
And then suddenly you're sorry.
No, I'm not sorry for that. That's good. Like, people should, when they're making games like Fallout and stuff, they need to draw inspiration from these kind of things.
Carcass tosser.
Brad? Yeah.
So you're a carcass tosser.
We're gonna have the world's worst mini game now coming from Stardock.
Yeah. Yeah, so be thankful for your PC.
Wouldn't that get Jack Thompson upset if we made a game like that?
He probably
no.
It's just goat carcasses.
Yeah. He probably plays it himself.
Yeah. You just kind of like want to roll a ball into the field instead. Guys, how about this instead?
Yeah.
Of the goat carcass.
There are all sorts of fun stuff.
It'll roll
nuances.
Better.
There's this other one. I forget the name. I'd have to have the. I brought the book with me to brush up on it. But it's basically. Like a courtship game, where a man will attempt to catch a woman. A woman's on horseback, too, and they'll attempt to catch her and, like, plan a kiss as they're both riding, and then, but she's able to fight back with lethal force if she wants. And then if, like, it's really weird. It's almost like, I don't know. I shouldn't
make the analogy. Place?
This was on Fox. This was on last week.
Yeah. But then eventually it gets to the point where, I don't know, if certain other inscrutable rites are observed, and the guy gets a full kiss from her, and they actually have, like, a tent. The families have a tent set up on the side, and then they'll go and consummate the thing after he finally catches her. But there's a lot of women, according at least to the source, that don't like it one bit, and there's never any kissing. There's a whole lot of
there's like vast areas of human behavior not accounted for in the gaming world.
It's an untapped market. Take them all into consideration.
Yes, when the M rating is just not enough.
Like homie rollers.
Yeah, let's bring up homie rollers.
Can we bring up homie rollers?
You can bring it up, sure. Jeff, there's a story.
We have a genuine Hispanic guy on our podcast today.
Okay.
We do?
You can be our test market.
All right.
Well, the story on 1UP is the top five. It's labeled the top five racist games.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And I originally proposed it as the top five games with racial stereotypes.
Right.
Which is pretty significant difference from, but I assume it's also a significant difference for Google hits and search results, and also for just digability and stuff like that. I don't know how it changed if it was
right. So it's posted as the top five racist games of all time.
Yeah,
and the number one game on this list is this game called Homie Rollers. I don't know if you guys know this franchise at all, but this is a DS game, and it's the first. First, I guess, video game made out of this whole, you know, industry this dude started called Homies.
Which has a little plastic capsule toys.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know of this. See, the Hispanic dude knows.
I know about him.
I know about him.
You know about Homies? Right, so...
I had coworkers that used to have them all over their desk.
The Homies?
Mm-hmm.
They've been around for a while, huh?
You know about Homies?
No, I'm out of touch.
And so it was founded by this guy, David Gonzalez, and he I was reading interviews about it with him this morning on Google that I'd found where, and this goes before the existence of the video games, where he was getting called by different media outlets about, like, are you perpetuating racial stereotypes? Are you, you know, are you perpetuating the idea that all Hispanics are into gang culture or whatever? And he said the contrary, that he felt like this was like representing barrio life, and this is what people are really like, and that all these characters in my game have a backstory, and if you go read the backstory, they're all like honorable people who are doing good things and are trying to avoid gang life and things like this. So that's the message that this guy's sending. But, you know, when whoever was putting together this 1UP article was looking at top five racist games, they, you know, thought of this DS game where, I guess, you know, you boot it up and you just have these guys going, hey, mama, you know, and eating tacos or whatever. So to him, that was racist. But
I don't, that's what I was curious about. I haven't played the game, but he said they were driving burritos.
Driving burritos?
I can't imagine. If that's the case, though, that's a racial stereotype taken to an extreme. But I don't know if that was a joke or what. I honestly don't know. I didn't play the game. I didn't write that one up. I have no idea.
What about Custard's Revenge?
That's
classic.
That was like, I think what they did was they put that in the intro for the story and said that, like, this is so obvious. It's kind of like if you're talking about best albums of all time and you're sick of, like, the guaranteed spot for, you know, Thriller, and then whatever Beatles albums always end up in there. It's like, we're going to, like, hit up some other stuff. Because, right. Yeah, Custard, I mean, that's the epitome
standard bearer.
The worst.
I just like how the number one racist game of all time is on a Nintendo system. There's something funny about that.
Yeah. Well, I sent out an email to a few people on 1UP because I thought, like, it just made me wonder because I don't know. Like, white dude, like, it sounds racist to me. But then, like, if this game is, like, made by a Hispanic guy and it's pitched to the Hispanic audience, then maybe the only people who are being racist here are actually the white people who think it is racist. When in fact, it's just a cultural thing that just doesn't...
There's a few layers there. I mean, another thing is that it's a joke article. I mean, I'm sure it was conceived as that, like, where... I mean, because, like, Punch-Out was in there, and that's, like, no... I mean, again,
don't know if it's racist.
Yeah,
it's,
no one's
there's
really...
racial stereotypes, you know, like they're... Here's the dude name. Well, I mean, the whole Great White Hope theme and your numinous helper, the Morgan Freeman role. And but aside from that, like in the arcade games, you know, there's Pizza Pasta as the Italian boxer, and you have like, all this kind of. I'm upset with that whole story, though. Someone I did a couple entries, and they got insanely edited so that they're not funny at all.
Oh, really?
It's a bad. I shouldn't be.
Maybe I shouldn't have brought this up at all.
It's bad. I depart from me. I never knew you.
It just struck me as when I read that article as odd that that game was picked, because I'm just trying. I can't even think of like what was that. We used to have that. What was that toy that was around here that was like that from that franchise? It was like it's like urban. It was like black.
Herbs.
What was it?
You guys were talking about or something. Wasn't it like the herbs or
the
something
herbs.
Like that?
Yeah. These like,
isn't that a Sims game?
Remember you read the back of the box at one point.
That toy that we had on the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, that, I don't know. You're confusing me. I was expecting you to say like MJ's got like that lowrider toy that plays like La Cucaracha or something and like bounces on hydraulics.
Or I just mean like the, that other toy was like, you know, like a black toy, you know, for like... black kids. I don't know. I just stopped talking. I'm too feeble.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I just feel like if you know, like let's say that I, as a Jewish guy, decided, you know, my kid and all her friends, they don't have any like good like toy role models. You know, my daughter's like playing with Barbies and shit, and she's obviously like some freaking, you know, wasp, you know, possibly Catholic or worse, you know, group. And I don't want my daughter, you know, she doesn't have any good sort of like homely Jewish looking, you know, superhero at, you know, to look up to, you know. She can't be, there's no dolls that are like obviously Jewish and, you know, kind of dumpy looking and really good at math.
That's actually
and maybe she
Princess
needs one
Nerdle.
Of those. So I've decided that what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a line of dolls, of you know, of like Jewish dolls. What could we call them?
You can answer that, Jeff.
And I'm not going to because I'll dig a deeper hole. But let's say so. I just decide I would like want to have all these.
You're like 5 seconds away from pulling a Lou Dobbs.
Yeah, no, I'm so
the Anti-Defamation League is at the door
I'm
right
so
now.
I'm so close to offending anybody who might still be listening. But let's say, okay, I get the money. I have a I get a bunch of my wealthy Jewish friends because you know we control the whole World Monetary Fund. Let's say that we get a bunch of money together and we make these dolls that are supposed to appeal to like Jewish kids, you know, because they don't want to play with Barbies. And these dolls happen to have certain characteristics that other people might consider racist or stereotypes, but then I might consider, well, that's just part of our culture.
This is fair because, you know, there's like, if you don't know, I don't, like, I didn't have very many Jewish friends growing up, but then, like, the only things I'd associate with the version of the Jewish toys are a dreidel and, like, the gold coin chocolate. And you're like,
right.
Dude, what racist made that up? Gold coin chocolate?
See, that's what I'm saying.
All the Jewish kids are collecting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that, maybe that's the same, like.
That's what I'm saying.
That game's racist. That chola's got, like, hair that's a mile high.
That's what I'm saying. Let's say that. Every doll
that chola does.
Every doll comes with six pieces of gelt, which are like these gold coin chocolates. Okay, mm-hmm. That's like what I grew up with was gelt, and then you guys see the box comes out, and you pick it up, and the doll's name is I don't know Ethel or whatever. You know, you open up the box and these gold coins come out and you guys go, oh, my God. Oh, that's so racist. How embarrassing. They put money inside the Jew doll box. Wow. God, those Jews are going to be so offended. I mean, what if that's all that this homie rollers thing is? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's my whole point.
It's all perspective.
You know, they're playing. Maybe, you know, you got Hispanic kids playing this game and you're riding around in a burrito and I don't know what else they're doing. And they're like, yeah. Just like at home. Okay, I'm done. Please stop me from talking. Someone else
can talk. I don't know, but to some extent, I kind of understand what you're saying. I mean, it might just be nice to have something in a game, even if it is, like, in a sense, stereotype, something that they can even identify with in any sort of way, rather than, like, I don't know, a Barbie game or something like that.
Right.
You know, it is something that, even if it's, like, doing it to the point where it's like a caricature of like what their culture is like, it's still something that they can identify with.
Right. Plus, there's a difference between like a positive caricature and a negative caricature. Like if you're seeing something you don't normally see in a game, but it's kind of they're presented in a positive light. It's like a good character.
Right.
Like maybe you're not so offended that it happens to be a raging stereotype.
Right.
I had this similar issue way back when I reviewed the game Lowrider for PlayStation 2. And it was like, because you could trick out, you know, you get your Lowrider and it's kind of like a rhythm action game. You do the buttons to make it bounce and you go for height and all this other stuff. You try to put on an appealing show, a crowd pleasing show, more or less. But the ways you do it is it's got the usual, you know, carrot thing where you unlock points and then you use the points to invest in your vehicle and your show. What you can get is like a big, you know, Virgin of Guadalupe to put on the trunk. You can like pop the trunk and make balloons in the colors of the Mexican flag fly out, and then like the Cucaracha will play and a horn, and I'm doing this and I'm feeling guilty as hell about it, but I'm like, I don't know though, like everything
right,
that you just said
audience.
So instead though, I kind of subverted it, and like, because you could make your own pictures with their little bitmap image thing and put those, so I made like a big dirty vagina and put that on the hood.
You were reviewing it, or are you just playing it?
I was reviewing it for EGM.
How would you even do that, like from like your perspective?
I now don't feel bad about anything I've said
school, man.
On this podcast.
I had to be honest. I want to be open and honest right now. That stuff happens when you're bored. It's like anything. The same reason that people draw like dicks and stuff on bathroom walls. You're like, why would you draw a dick in there? Like, it's something just overcomes you. You don't know. It's primal.
I've never understood that.
I've never been to draw a dick right now. Myself.
Yeah, you're supposed to draw boobs anyway.
Yeah. Or you draw it all. I've seen like whole murals. It's like to rival like that in the best like taqueria. You know, there's like a full like sexual mural.
Yeah, every bathroom or at least back when I was there at UC Berkeley, every men's room would be just murals of just horrible sexual drawings on. And it's just like, what? This is the cream of the university crowd in the United States. Yeah. Come on.
It was that way at the University of Washington, you know, in the art department in their bathrooms. That and the only funny thing from it was that the toilet paper dispenser was labeled UW Diplomas Take One, which I'm sure is a joke repeated throughout the in universities across the nation.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you thought this was what you were getting into, huh, Brad?
Oh, this is pretty tame.
Yeah, it is. I decided not to read because it's potentially offensive. I brought some transcripts from a chat that Anthony and GFW freelancer Rory were engaged in.
But you can't mention it now and not talk about it. Enough.
That's how I usually do it. So I'm just...
now you're just teasing.
What is this?
I just had to make sure. I had this in my back pocket, and I was like, oh, God, dude, Brad's on. I don't know if I can read this.
He's a respectable businessman.
Oh, yeah.
But so there's this infamous guy. This involves Company Heroes. It's not about Company Heroes, really. It's just about this conversation. But there's an infamous player named Rip2000, and every night he hosts these 4v4 games called Christian Host. And that's what inspired when we had, like, the series of Wiccan Host games, but it was, like, spelled H-Y-S-T. But so we were playing with them. And he seems like a pretty nice guy, but then when you start talking to him when he's playing,
he gets a little crazy.
He gets a little weird. So we started off
like on vent chat or
no? This is all in game. I don't know how, but Rory was able to pull the whole thing from the game. I know it's right from the games because it's listing lag warnings and all sorts of stuff. But he, so we started playing a 3v3. I was on the other team. Anthony and Rory were on his team, and they did the usual thing. They're like, "Let's run to his base, build." You know, barbed wire and tank traps around his HQ and make sure that that's the totality of his game is sitting inside his own little base doing nothing. So they started doing it, and immediately, you know, Rory, who was playing as Gorgeous and Gorging, says, "I'm making your base a shining city on the hill. You are defended from all evils." And then Rip says, "You have demons. I can help you get rid of them." And then Anthony's like, "See how protected you are? Look at me. I'm out here getting shot." And Rip says, "No, I can help you and your demons, but you have to want me to help you." And then Rory says, "Yes, they make me do this in every game I ever play, and they tell me that it's a good idea." And then Rip says, "No, it's not." Rory says, "The urge is so strong, how do I stop?" "Well, first, you have to give the title deed of your life to Jesus." And Anthony says, "Paper? Have you done that? Does my mom have that? I don't have a deed to my life. How do I get this?" "Well, just the right to your life. In a way."
We're bad people.
Anthony's not laughing so hard now. It's like sitting here with his head in his hands.
I'm glad I didn't know that this was happening. So, Anthony says,
do I have to kill myself? And Rip says, no, only in a way. If you actually kill yourself, this is a waste. Help me understand. Okay, then. You must accept Jesus as the Lord your God. And then Rory says, I did already. And then Rip says, good. Have you been filled with the Spirit? Do you feel it? I did. This is so sacrilegious, dude.
Is the game going on while this is going on?
A game is going on.
You guys like clicking.
I'm on the other team, and we're beating the shit out of them all. But to be fair, I started bombing like Anthony and my own team too. So then they're just like, okay, thanks for the help. And then Rip's like, no, we're not done yet. And then he's like, he's like, you have to be ready when the war starts between heaven's men and the devil demons. So they said, that sounds scary. And then he's like, can we see these demons? And then Rip says, no, are you ready to kick demonic ass now? And then Rory's like, is my sister a demon? She has a tattoo. Rip says, yes, she will have some of her life, like you and me. And then they respond like, what? And then he's like, we all have demons. And they're just like, I'm scared, Rip. This, don't worry, it's a demon making you feel that. Do you want to kick his ass with me? What? And then Rory says, what can I, a shit-kicking turnip farmer, do to stop the devil himself? Can I cast him back into hell? And then Rip says, yes, you can cast him into hell. once you got him out of your life, you can walk right. Deny your flesh and read the Bible. And then says, like a monk? Yes, and pray. Then Rory says, well, I'm a castrato, so I don't have fleshy desires. And Rip says, yes. but there are negative things going on inside of you.
And this is all going on during a Company of Heroes game.
Yes. Yeah. Gameplay, Brad.
Yes, and in which people are shooting each other. The characters are shooting.
Right, right.
People are dying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so let's skip ahead. I think there's some other good stuff. He says, so he brings up Rory brings up his sister again, and you know, if he could deal with her. And Rip says, yes, you can learn this, and you can do it on other people. I'll help you. Are you ready to kick the demons into hell? Yes, sir. And then Chuff, yes. You can treat those negatives like what they are.
Whoa, hold on. No worries. Lost a headset from laughter.
I laughed too hard in that circle.
Okay. So Rory and Anthony, I just got blown away. Are these guys we're playing unclean or something? Rip, they mean business, and you must too. I'm in the business of losing, I guess. If you want to know more, email me. I will be contacting you. It will change your life. I'm not lying. Then Rory says, will the Lord help us overcome the overwhelming odds in this game? And then there's like a lag warning waiting for player Rip to catch up. Is lag grace like the grace of the Lord? And then Rip says, yes, it is close. So that was bad.
They were so whoa, wait a second. Are you saying that you can still barbed wire people into their bases?
It didn't work. He was able to research.
Well, he was prepared for it. Yeah, he knew exactly how to counter it. So
how do you counter it?
You mortar the barbed wire to blow it out of the way.
But that was the old trick, is we try to get it where you do it before they can get support center up.
We were too
slow.
And
then they can't get the mortar. But, yeah, the other thing, in your guys' defense, that wasn't like... I know that wasn't our first encounter with Rip. We'd played like many games with him before, and without any provocation, he would start telling people that they were demons in the game, or that they were possessed by devils.
Though he is pretty good at Company Heroes.
He's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got God on his side.
Yeah.
So that's why he does so well.
But it's funny, when you do join his game and you're in the lobby waiting to play, and if there's anyone that's like got really good stats or something, and you're afraid, you just start telling Rip, because he's the host, that guy's like you. You find some way to say that his name is demonic or something.
You deface him.
Oh, and he won't let him in.
And then he'll kick him out.
I'm going to go to hell when I die. Thank you, Sean.
Anthony doesn't feel so good. You can look over there.
You're a bad man.
Somewhere my really Catholic grandma with her Guadalupe statue is crying for me.
So before we go, Anthony and I have to go. We're going to go over and visit Flagship Studios to talk about Mythos, but we've been playing it over the weekend. And
are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, it's like
fair game.
Totally.
Cool.
It's up. Have you been playing it at all, Brad?
No, I haven't.
It's good.
Yeah, the quick rundown on it is that
at some point, this is partially what we're going to go do, is clarify all these rumors. But as I recall, it was a small contingent of their team that when they were working on Hellgate London sort of made this side project just as like a sandbox to test certain things. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of emerged as a game in its own right. And then they decided, well, this is so much fun internally. We're going to like see if we can just make this a free game. That was the last I heard of it. Then we got into the beta now with the third update. And I started playing it, and like, I don't know, about an hour in, start saying there's that story doesn't check out.
Yeah, just this is like a full-on game. Like, it's already, like, even as a beta, it feels like they could release it right now. It's
yeah.
Like, and it looks good.
And it seems like that was what people were saying like a year ago.
Is that, I think they were, but I was comparing it to the way it looks now, especially to the screens and stuff now. And it's like now they have people working on the voice work. They have their artists like working on generating, you know, all the, like really, you know, pretty quality assets. They're, you know, doing illustrations for stuff, each, you know, these new zones and giving them a unique character to them. And just all the work that you expect in a traditional game. So I'm just thinking they started realizing that, hey, there's a lot of potential here. And everyone I know that's in our group that's playing it, you know, the five of us, the usual people I talk about, all play it for an hour and then we've, you know, continue to play. And they're like, if they had released this instead of Hellgate, they would have had a big success on there. I mean, I think Hellgate's actually successful too, but I think that...
Well, wasn't the main problem with Hellgate is just it was a little buggy when it came out? I mean, there wasn't the game itself pretty good?
The game, yeah. I mean, the game definitely had...
It was a 3D Diablo.
Yeah, yeah. The game definitely had its moments.
The bugs were crushing it, though.
Yeah.
Was the main complaint
it's a hard question to answer because the bugs were so brutal that it made it hard to play enough to tell.
Right.
For us.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of enjoying it despite the game. I was forcing myself. I was like, okay, I do like the theory of what's going on here, but then every once in a while something just horribly game-ending would happen. Like, you'd get four duplicates of a boss that you're supposed to get one, you know, one version of the boss.
But that made it harder, right?
A little bit.
I figured that out.
So it was just
four
like...
Four bosses harder than one boss.
Yeah.
And then they just keep duplicating, and then you're just like, what is going on? How did they not catch this? And you just get so frustrated, you just shut it down, and it was just the...
See, in Mythos, there's like, I haven't encountered like any glaring bugs at all, and it's only in beta.
And I think even if we did, we'd be more forgiving because it's free and because it's in beta. That's part of the thing. But there's also, I think, there's a lot of its perception. So that, I mean, you just have a whole different set of expectations given these circumstances. But at the same time, the appearance of it and the aesthetic, whereas, you know, Hellgate, I mean, it's a pretty cool idea, I guess. You know, it's very Spawn-like. Spawn, you know, Todd McFarlane. And I don't think that's for everyone. I mean, it's just this grimy, depressing world just loaded up with just, you know, horrid demons. You know, they're supposed to be gross and stuff. And this is definitely like, I mean, again, Diablo 2, this is a remake of it, more or less, but with a Blizzard aesthetic.
It looks like
World of Warcraft.
If you could play World of Warcraft from an overhead static 3D, like, third-person camera.
And it's because it's a lot
like the Warcraft games.
Because it's that much more, you know, whimsical and stuff, I find like I could play, I have like more endurance to play it for longer periods of time. I mean, I get that way. When I play any kind of really grimy game, like Condemned 2 is a recent example, I just can't play those games that long. It doesn't mean they're bad or anything, but it's like there's just so much. That's it, right? You want to go and look at the sun, see some flowers after a while. I'm tired of this shitty, gross
world. So you're happier in like Mario Mushroom Land, huh?
It's not like that, but I think I do think that people probably have a lot, you know, kind of like when you do like color perception psychology and they test that, well, what color exactly do you want to paint a doctor's room? What do you want to paint a classroom? Mm-hmm. And you see how long people can sit in any, you know, given environment. I just think it's like that with games. I mean, if you're going to be in that kind of environment in a game, you're supposed to grind and just play and play and play. After a while, I mean, I prefer in Mythos where you go in the sunny valley with pretty trees.
You can go into a dark cave and do a dungeon, and then you emerge back out.
I've always felt that was one of the big key reasons for WoW's popularity that doesn't get brought up enough.
The variety?
The variety and just the general color palette and the general sort of happy, I'm in Disneyland sort of feeling it has about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So there,
and this definitely has that.
Yeah, it's shooting for it. I mean, again, it's not like if this was a Blizzard as they exist now game, I mean, it would have that much more, you know, it would be that much more obvious that they've had all their artists just sit and sweat every detail and make it work. But it's pretty close. It feels like, I mean, it's a huge start.
Especially for beta. I mean, like I said, it still feels like really far, far, far along.
Yeah, it does. The gameplay, I don't know what else to say about it other than like the Diablo thing or the
Titan
Quest.
It's straight up Diablo.
So it's pretty much kill, loot.
Kill, loot, yeah, but they have corrected a lot of things in Diablo that maybe multiplayer bothered people. Like, depending on who you play with, it'll still become like a loot fest, like rushing for loot. But since every monster drops loots for individuals, like, I'll never see the stuff that drops for Sean.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to worry about like who can click the blue item the fastest or something like that. So then if we find something, it just encourages us to trade more if we want to actually help each other out.
And I'm surprised that there's already just like a massive variety of like pretty cool things to pick up. I mean, the powers that you use, there's like a you know, big sizable skill tree with multiple tiers.
Man, yeah,
there's tons and tons of like they get the pacing right again. I guess for this kind of game, when all it is about is just constantly giving you, it's like, you know, you're playing 21 or something, you know, you got to like win once in every five hands to keep playing or something.
The Baldur's Gate, like hack and slash games where you're just going through and destroying a dungeon real fast.
So is all the loot like that? So you rank, I'm just trying to finish that thought. I mean, so what it means is that the pacing for your leveling up and getting some like nice item or a new weapon or a new spell is like good enough to keep you there where you don't feel like it's this is taking too long, I'm going to turn it off. You know, they've got that right.
So is all the loot like that you would never see what Sean picks up?
I'll never see what Sean
picks
up.
That's weird. So is it randomized for both players?
Yeah.
That seems weird because like part of WoW's appeal is, you know, the jealousy you get when someone else does get something. You're like, oh, I want that thing.
Right. I guess it's just that when we're in a group, I mean, we're just always talking and sharing items. I don't know. At least with us, probably because we're friends, it worked where we're always coordinating and being like, oh, you're a wizard. Because there are items that are very clearly made for each class.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just like they always have like one stat requirement to wear them. And since there's only like a very few classes currently in Mythos, it's like, each stat is really classes depending upon a particular stat. Do we need to go?
We got a few minutes. So you need to like show, I mean, well, what happens is you end up, if you're in vent together, you brag or you just show it. It just appears on the screen. You see someone has got like some giant, you know, wielding these giant maces or something that are making the huge, you know, pyrotechnic show every time you beat someone with them. Then you know he got something good. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say about this is that it's created all the stress among our usually tightly-knit group, tightly-knit insofar as people that do nothing but make fun of each other the whole time they're playing games. But we're playing, and, you know, Rory and Matt and James, other guys that we play, they're also, they play, like, Lord of the Rings online, and they've generally into MMOs and stuff. And I'm playing with them, and I usually don't play that many of these sorts of games, so it takes me longer. I get a bunch of stuff, and I'm like, wait for me, guys. I got to figure out what I'm going to throw away and what I can equip and what I want to do, or they play more. They'll poop sock it, and then they always have to be. It's not just because they want. They always want to make sure they're at least like two or three levels above everyone else. And the whole time they're playing, they're bragging about, which is weird. I was like, this is the kind of people I hate normally in life. Like, dude, you're bragging to me really because you got this piece of shit like cape you're wearing in this stupid ass game. But they're totally like pulling this the whole time we play. They're always running ahead, and I'm tagging along, basically walking through an environment where there's just a bunch of fucking bodies, looted corpses everywhere, and it's like, let me catch up, like, let me, so we can all do the thing. And it's kind of like, it's frustrating. I like to play these games where we're all just, this makes sense. My ideal world, we're going through a dungeon, everyone's contributing in some way. It's like, we need this guy to do this to fight this enemy. It's not just more like a boss encounter instead of just, right, let's just go through here and click, and who's got the highest stats can just beat up everything first. And
I got to figure out how to get you into a WoW instance.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's all it is.
It is like that when you're around people exactly that are all similar level and stuff. That's the problem, though, is that you were like level 3 and they were all like 11 and we were in like a level 3 dungeon. So they were just blowing everything.
You're right, right.
Yeah, that happened in WoW too. And
yeah, exactly.
No,
but when
all,
you're like all in an instance in WoW together, all the same level, it is exactly.
Yeah, let's
like
all go
everyone
to the
has a role,
mines,
and you have to like plan it, like what you're about to do.
Yeah, that would be fun. But it's like, yeah, the other thing is just the whole competitive. Because I don't know, I felt it a little bit. It was enough to keep me playing.
See,
but some people really feel good when they get that.
As I think that like that's part of the reason they made it where people have their own individual loots, because they didn't want necessarily that competitiveness over who was getting what. But I guess
I don't know. I think there's the competitiveness is always going to be there. What it's going to change, though, is this, the actual fighting over who scored the item. It's like basically in that kind of model that you're describing, it's like a Barry Bonds like home run ball every like time you kill a monster.
know. Well, if you have different class items, like if you have, you know, just one mage with you and the mage item drops, other people seeing it is kind of nice just because you can kind of go, oh, hey, good job. And there's that other, right, other level where it's not competitive. It's just like
there is also like
camaraderie.
Some incentive to not give items to players, though. Like, because the whole game has a really cool crafting system where everyone, no matter your class, can craft items. Mm-hmm. And then you just pick a, like, it's kind of like in WoW. When you end up like doing armor specialization or something, or like you're a blacksmith and then you specialize in armor or hammers, mm-hmm, or something. So in this, you specialize, like I'm a class that uses a rifle, so I specialized in the one that takes me down like a rifle tier. And everyone has to use all these ingredients that are constantly dropping as well. But you can also like break magic items into ingredients for crafting as well. Mm-hmm. So there is some discouragement from wanting to give all your amazing items, because if you can't use it, you're like, well, I'll get like a really good
disenchanted.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get like a really good disenchant from it.
So we gotta my play final, this thing. Final note on that is it's not fun when I level up and I want to be all excited. Guys, I'm catching up, guys. And then they're just like, cool, there's a spider over there. Go beat on it when we beat these ogres. Yeah.
Makes you feel sad.
You don't be.
You're just mad at your friends. You're not mad at the game.
I told Sean we'd go do like two men.
There's nothing to, it's all my. I just wanted to call him out right now.
Just think, if we start playing now, we'll be the noobs and you'll be the king. You'll be like the level
I don't
want to
be
dude.
The king. Because that's like, I don't feel. Dude, Jeff.
You want to be king of the retards?
Level 11 mythos. You're only level 3.
Show me where to go, Sean.
That's worse.
All those games are the best when you're all the same level playing together. And
yeah, some games, Final Fantasy XI in particular, enforced it so much that people would kick out anyone not the exact same level as you. Like if you were all 17 and all of a sudden one person hit 18, they're like, get out of here, because you drag the
bad.
Yeah, it was horrible.
So yeah, I recommend. I think everyone on staff.
When it hits open beta, I would recommend it to anyone. Enjoy it. That even sounds.
So right now it's a closed beta.
It's free.
Yeah.
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 We'll come back with the scoop.
Yeah, I just want to find out how they're going to monetize it in some way. Like, they should.
That's what we're going to go find out right now.
Head over there.
All right.
So, yes, sorry, didn't get to be part of the focus on Brad part, but
yeah,
that's part two.
Ask him.
Because I won.
Do you have any questions? Want to ask him on your way out before you rip
I figure
your
you'll
headphones
ask him.
Off?
I want to know all about, you know, the future of Stardock and just the whole, you know, use the online publishing that. And the. How it's going to grow.
The slow migration of purely pornographic material and content. It's the whole thing.
And also just the general, like just your thoughts on the state of, I mean, since it's been such a big topic this year, I mean, just the state
of PC.
Yeah,
what was the deal? No, I didn't go to GDC this year. What was the deal there? I mean, after GDC, everyone was talking about the game industry. Every month or so on Quarter to Three, there's a, you know, PC gaming's doomed article. But this year at Game Developers Conference, there must have been like, what, was there like a Jim Jones type moment there or something?
There was.
I don't know. Just all of a sudden, it was like a big topic rather than the, you know, death knell number 977.
Yeah.
We came back. Jeff and I joke. People are like, so what did you see? And we're like, Jeff's like, oh, I went to room 247 and heard Cliffy B announce the death of PC games. I was like, oh, cool. I was over and, you know, we just kept naming the different, you know, industry figures telling us that that PC gaming was dead. So
yeah, I was happy that little bit made it onto the one-up show.
I think that, the success of Sins, I mean, what other sorts of games, you know, where Stardock's going.
And
how specifically you guys are picking, you know, the games that mm-hmm. you're
Yeah, I mean, the game industry is evolving. I mean, maybe I'm liking to think that what they really mean is that the game industry is evolving from the old model. I mean, the old days, you made a PC game, you found a publisher to give you gazillions of dollars up front as an advance, and then you never saw another penny for it. Mm-hmm. And the game came out, usually a little buggy. You put out a patch and then an expansion pack, and then you moved on. And that model is just not competitive anymore. And,
right.
I mean, the costs of making a AAA game are too high to make that happen. And in an age of World of Warcraft, you can't...
But when you say AAA game, what do you mean, Brad? Do you mean in terms of monetary value or what?
I'm talking purely in cost.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if your game costs millions and millions of dollars to make... The PC game market, North America, there is a hard limit on how many copies you can sell. And this is not an unknown item. And that's one of the things that I find really frustrating when people talk about, well, the piracy's eating it or this other thing's eating it. And it's like, well, these NPD figures are available. You can find out how many copies of these various titles have sold. And yet people will make a game that requires... quad core processor with a half gig, shader 3 video card to run and then be shocked that they aren't selling as many copies as they'd like.
Mm-hmm. But this is a question I've been asking for many months now, and I'm just wondering if the concept of what is a blockbuster now has shifted to a point where the failure is almost, you know, a preordained thing when it comes to PC titles. Like, it seems to me like in the old days, what we used to consider a hit was a lot smaller amount,
right,
of sales.
100,000 units or so,
right,
was a huge hit. And the thing is, I don't know how that happened. It's sort of like you all played Commodore 64 games right in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And in your mind, you can remember, like, oh, yeah, I remember playing, you know, Lode Runner or Raid on Bungling Bay, and the graphics were photorealistic. I remember it that way. And then you see it, you know, you get an emulator, and you go, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. It's sort of like that, sure, with the PC game stats, because the NPD stats, you can go and look, the top, you know, 100 games, best-selling games of all time, didn't sell gazillions of units. I mean, other than a handful, most of them have not, right, sold over a million units.
Right. So it makes me wonder if it's not like, I don't believe it's dying. It's not that it's dying. It's just that, like, they keep thinking that they're going to get, they meaning the publishers of PC games, are thinking that they're going to get the same kind of numbers that they might get out of a GTA 4 or something else, where I don't feel like that's ever been the case.
Right. They've never gotten those kinds of numbers. And yet, people, and me personally, if I spend, I'm not a real game developer. I'm just a gamer who happens to be decent at business. I try to make games that cost less to create than they generate in revenue. And this is radical, but let me repeat it. So if the game costs X to make, I want it to make Y back, where Y is greater than X.
That's what we try to do here at GFW. We try to spend enough money so that when we sell our, like, 4,000 copies, that's actually a profit.
That's the dream. Yeah, 4,000 copies.
Uh-huh.
Oh, geez, and your advertising pricing is a little bit off.
Don't talk to us about that. Are we charging a lot for ads in our magazine?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, more than the other PC publications,
really,
in the same space.
You'd think we wouldn't be having that strategy, but with the whole Chapter 11 thing, you'd think it'd be sort of like fire sale.
Yeah, well, no.
Five ads for a dollar.
That whole thing is just so they can get your creditors and become stockholders anyway. It's not a real Chapter 11.
Right. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah. Brad knows more than we do.
Yeah. We, you know, we're not business people here. That's why we work on a magazine.
No, it was as if Davis owned a lot of stuff because of the old, SoftBank thing.
Yeah.
And so instead of having to having all the profits constantly going to paying off debt, they just turn them into owners of the company. And to do that, they're having a bankruptcy court take care of it. So it's not because Ziff Davis is dying or anything. It's just a convenient way to turn creditors into stockholders.
Thank you for telling us that, yes. Brad.
Oh,
so do you think we'll solve jobs?
Brad Ziff PR guy.
Yeah.
No, couldn't have planned this any better.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think everything's going to be fine.
Thanks, Brad.
Cool. I'm glad. So what do you consider, like, a successful game then?
Generally,
if you beat that equation you were talking about,
it has to be profitable. It's obviously, I mean, a lot of people, I read a bunch of articles in response to what my anti-piracy article, and people were saying, well, is he saying that you just have to make casual games? It's like, I don't think anyone can say Sins of a Solar Empire is some sort of puzzle game. Or, I mean, we are talking about a game that's made millions and millions of dollars in the first 45 days it was out.
Is that right?
Yeah, and that's a successful game. If it's making 2, 3, 4 times more than it took to make it, that's successful.
So in your eyes, clearly, and it sounds like it is, Sins of a Solar Empire is a success.
Yeah.
But let's say it's the exact same game that it is now, but... And I'm just throwing these names out just at random, but let's say, you know, it's published instead by Activision or EA or Ubisoft or whoever.
They wouldn't have published
it
in the first
place. But if they did, is it a hit to them too, do you think?
I don't know. I know that a few years ago when Atari came to us and they wanted us to do Master of Magic and Star Control 4 and a bunch of other things, they didn't want to be bothered with it because they didn't think it would sell a million units, and they wanted to only focus on titles that could sell like a million units. So... would they consider it a successful game? I'm not sure. I think that you had to make such a huge threshold of gross revenue with them. Putting aside the net, I think they're more focused on gross than net.
This is my whole problem, is that if you're only going to be focused on gross, then PC gaming can't win, right? But it never would have been able to going all the way back to the 80s.
Right, but how long in the 80s were those companies publicly traded companies?
Right.
Versus now, whereas on stock, you know, stockholders want to see their gross revenue going up. Look, they reported blah, blah, blah with gazillions in sales, right? I mean, Stardock has a huge profit margin, I shouldn't say. I mean, we're struggling. Please buy our game. But
rich bastard.
Our gross is puny compared to other companies. I mean,
right.
So it's all depends on what you're going for. And I've seen this over and over again where companies want to have huge gross revenue and not worry so much about the net.
Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's just totally a source of frustration for me is that if a game company or publisher could just be happy with a certain amount of profit based on a certain amount of sales, that's actually based on reality.
Yeah.
Rather than on some mythic millions of sales just because World of Warcraft happens to get it, or the Sims. You know, you've got two franchises here that have gone so far stratospherically out of the realm of normality that to think that you're going to be able to duplicate that is just, to me, ludicrous.
Right. They're not the norm. They're the anomaly. And it is. It's one of the things about the publicly traded companies. They just don't seem to care about making profit as much as they are generating gross revenue.
Right.
So how does the digital distribution play into the numbers? Because one of the quote-unquote excuses you often hear is like, well, you look at NPD numbers and maybe those aren't so high, but you're not counting all the digital distributions.
That's true. I mean, we've made more money on digital distributing since the Solar Empire than we have at retail so far.
Does that mean you've sold more copies that way?
It's pretty close. I don't know. We make twice as much when you know over digital than we do at retail
because right, there's no middleman.
Right, exactly. So it's pretty close. We've sold a lot of copies direct,
and those numbers are not showing up. Like
right, they
Sean's
don't count.
Saying, right.
Well, NPD doesn't count Walmart, I don't think either. And that's where we've sold, I think, the most copies of Sins at retail is
wow.
at Walmart.
So to NPD, your sales must look like shit, huh?
Why would they not
between Walmart and?
I'm not sure why they don't. I don't know. I don't know why NPD. That would be an interesting thing to ask them.
That's kind of like, isn't that the biggest
You'd
selling
think they're pretty important.
Point?
Yeah, I don't know
from a statistical point of view, though, it doesn't matter, right? I mean, everyone you assume that all the major publishers are at Walmart anyway. So if you're taking a sample from Best Buy and EB and Circuit City and whatnot, then you probably have a good idea of the order, too. And then if everything else is equal, because, I mean, I've seen people talking about, well, Sins may have been at the top of NPD's charts last month, but that's because they don't count digital. It's like, well, that, you know, if we counted digital, we would have probably been number one then because we, you know, sell so many.
So that's, you mentioned Walmart, and I remember when I think if Delsiv 2, maybe not Dark Avatar, but Dreadlords came out, that was number one at Walmart its first week, right?
Yeah, for first month of February, it was the number one game at Walmart.
How did that happen?
There was a game called Master Orion 3 came out. And you know,
I remember that.
Yeah. How well do you remember it?
I remember I did not like it.
Yeah. Well, so that game came out, and there was a flyer in the box for Galciv 2 in the Master Orion 3 box. So when it showed up at Walmart, all these people went and bought Galciv, and that's the biggest reason, I think.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So the
thank
failure
you, Atari.
Of Move 3.
Yeah.
Thanks for screwing that
up. Yeah, Master Orion 3 basically made Galciv 2.
Wow.
Or actually, no, I might think not Galciv 2, Galciv 1. I'm all mixed up. It was Galciv 1.
Galciv 1 was much closer to Moo.
Yeah, it was a Galciv 1 that took off. But in terms of Galciv 2, I think it was just a kind of a follow-on. Once we had basically the player base for Master Orion had kind of shifted to Galaxizations because of the Moo 3 thing. Mm-hmm. And then when Galciv 2 came, it had a built-in audience.
It just, I mean, you don't want to like stereotype users or assume who's buying what where, but
yes, you do.
Sure, you do. Okay, so you do.
Go for it, Jeff.
All right, I'm doing it. You wouldn't think that Walmart would be the place where you find your most active Galciv 2 fan base.
No. And well, the thing is that it's all relative, though. It's I couldn't explain it either. I mean, when Oblivion came out, it totally, you know, kicked Galciv off the top of the charts easily, and that's a totally different game because Oblivion sold like gangbusters at Walmart.
Mm-hmm. But Oblivion also, I mean, like as far as I remember, like there was TV advertising. It was a much more mainstream game in a way than Galciv 2. just seems of all things at like that game.
I'd like to get. I haven't seen the stats at Walmart for Sins. I'd like to see how well it's doing at there because I know that Sins is sold way better at Walmart than Gals. Sins has beaten Gals of Two in sales by a huge margin, which as a designer, Gals of Two is kind of a mixed feeling mixed about that.
Now, when you first came around with Sins, I mean, it was clear that you knew as a publisher that you had something good on your hands. I mean, going back a long time ago, you were pretty high on the game. But now that it's out and it's gotten the reviews it's had and it's done the sales it's done, I mean, has it exceeded your expectations?
Yeah, I mean, our expectations were that it would do about as well as Collectivizations 2 at best because it was a new title, new developer. I mean, Ironclad had never made a game before. The team members had worked on other games, but Ironclad itself hadn't. And it was fourth quarter. Remember, fourth quarter was a little bit busy, so it was very hard to get preview coverage. So we were very nervous. And then it came out, and it's just, I think it's selling at around 1.6 or 1.7 times Collectivizations rate did, which is pretty huge considering Gals of Two was pretty successful.
So how do you decide? Like you said, Ironclad had never made a game before. How do you decide that these are the guys you want to go with?
In their case, we talked to them a long time, and Stardock, when we decided to get into publishing, we had a couple things we wanted to do differently than the traditional publishing arrangement. That is, one is we wanted to integrate our teams together, and we talked to them a long time about that, about making sure that they're open to. We would be a part of their game development process, and they would be part of our marketing process so that we could fill any holes. And they seemed very open to that. And I remember when I was first playing the game, they had the Empire Tree, that thing on the left side.
Yeah.
That was so revolutionary. I went, oh, my God, these guys are geniuses.
Did it scare you at first? Because I think that was our reaction was like, I don't know what to make of that because I've only seen this for however long I get a demo for. And it looks really scary. And then obviously now,
in the screenshots,
it's awesome.
It scared the heck out of me. Uh-huh. But when I started playing, I went, oh my God, why didn't I think of this? And then secondly, how can I steal this without anyone knowing I stole it? And then I realized I'm saying that on a podcast and it's being recorded.
Well, we would all steal it too if we were making games too.
I think you're allowed, right?
Yeah.
Allowed. If anyone is.
Hey, I want to hear about Political Machine 2008.
All right. Well, let's see. We're doing Political Machine 2008, which is a strategy game. CGW liked it back in the day.
We did.
Yep. And the 2008 version, far, far better. We've learned a lot from it. We have a fantasy strategy game that's in development, and because it's a land-based game, we had to develop this new 3D engine. So we took that engine and we wrote Political Machine with it. So it's kind of a rewrite from what we had before. So all your characters are truly 3D. You can design them yourself. So if you want to have Obama or Clinton or McCain, you can have them in there or make your own characters. And I mean, control how big their head is, what clothes they're wearing, put glass. I mean, it's almost like Spore type design. Instead of creatures. Don't know. I guess they would be creatures because they're politicians. But, they're politicians that you're designing here, too. And you go off and start campaigning around the country.
I've got to say the whole idea of custom creation like that, when I first picked up the second Gals of expansion, there was a custom enemy feature.
Right.
And I totally dismissed it at first. Whatever. That's just thrown in there. I spent more time with that thing than almost with any other aspect of that game, making my own, like...
Well, we're finishing up Twilight of the Arno, which is the second expansion pack, and in that, and this was really a dumb idea in hindsight, because it was way more work than we realized, every race gets their own tech tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just cosmetic. I mean, they get their own tech tree, their own text. And so when you create your own custom enemies, now you can mix and match, like, tech trees and all kinds, give them their own tech tree and everything, too.
Can you make a tech tree from scratch, or do you pick?
It comes with an editor to make your own tech tree.
Oh, God.
I know. It's because this is the last last expansion pack we're doing for Gals of 2. So when we release it, it's going to be just insane. There's no way we can cost justify it. It's just sort of like, here you go. I think it comes with like 7 editors. So you can basically, you want to do your own expansion packs or do your own stuff, here you go. Go nuts. And it's, of course, they're very polished, the editors are. So you can go crazy and make your own races and your own units. And I mean, just go nuts with it.
So is there anything, now that this is the last expansion, that you still wanted to do, if you could make one more expansion, like, you wanted to add that you hope maybe the community is going to have?
Oh, I would have, yeah, there's some stuff I would like to have added multiplayer in.
right?
At some point,
I think that's the one everyone tactical most loudly about.
Tactical battles. I mean, that's what a sequel. If we do a sequel to Gal Civ, there's a Gal Civ 3. It'll have multiplayer. It'll have tactical battles, and I don't know. For me, I like the computer AI. That's what I'm working on in it. So I'm always looking to make the AI more sophisticated and then that sort of thing. But we won't be getting back to that. We won't be getting back to Gal Civ. We won't be a Gal Civ 3 for years and years. We got a fantasy strategy game. We still got to finish Society, that which is the RTS MMO kind of game. I don't know if you guys remember me mentioning that like 10 years ago. We just, good thing we didn't over-publicize. It'd be on the Vaporware list.
Society? Do you remember that, Jeff?
I don't remember that, no.
Yeah, it's a large-scale RTS type game. And so we still have to finish that one. Then we can look back. And of course, we have our games that we're publishing that's going to keep us busy for a while.
So you've now mentioned twice this fantasy strategy game, which, of course, we here have heard of in past discussions, but we haven't talked about it. So since you brought it up here twice now, does that mean you're ready to talk about it?
We can talk about it. I mean, I can't call it by name yet. But
it doesn't have one, or just it's not official?
It's not official yet. But this Monday we're going to be announcing a major new game we're going to be publishing, and so that will probably be coming out February, and then the fantasy strategy game will come out the following February. So we'll have an extended beta program, but the fantasy strategy game could be best described as kind of like Master of Magic like. But in this, you design your own units. You have all kinds of cool spells, and one of the cool features is that when you zoom out, the map becomes like a cloth map, like in Lord of the Rings. So you can zoom all the way out or zoom all the way in and see individual leaves on trees, and players can actually create their own content and then submit it, and then once they go into moderation, they're available to all players within the game. So you're not having to go onto the web and download stuff. It's actually part of the game. So that's in terms of self expanding.
Sounds spore like.
A little bit, though. I mean, we were working on this long, long time ago. But I've always been a big believer in letting the players be part of the creation process as much as you can. I mean, there's some really cool Babylon 5 and Star Trek mods for Galactic Civilizations where now you're playing the Minbari versus the Earth Alliance or whatever.
Yeah, I did stuff like that myself.
Yeah,
I did not make any of those mods, but my own personal ones. So,
to old-time Master of Magic fans, can they consider this some kind of like game, a spiritual follow-up, if you will, something along those lines? Or
it's definitely not a Master of Magic clone, because there is so much. I mean, there's so many new game mechanics that we've been able to add in because of the technology has come a long way. But for example, because it's of the 3D engine, which they didn't have back then, when you start out the map, you start on a world that's been totally devastated. And as you pick whether you're good or evil, and if you're good, as your territory goes out, it comes back to life and you see, plants and trees growing and flowers, and it just looks really pretty. And if you're evil, of course, it looks like Mordor, and it's just, becomes really nasty and scary looking as it expands into the world, too. Whereas you couldn't do that back in the 80s, or 90s, I should say, because you couldn't do that kind of texture mapping onto a 3D surface like that.
Turn-based?
Turn-based. Tactical combat, multiplayer.
Turn-based, wow. Because, that's your thing? Is that?
I just like games where you're not feeling rushed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want people to be able really enjoy whether going into a battle or picking a spell that they want to cast. I want them to be able to choose it without being rushed at all.
So I know you work directly on your own games, and you're the CEO and a million other things. So what exactly do you, what's your responsibility in coding? Are you like AI master?
I am the AI guy. Okay. I code all of Stardock's computer AIs. So Galactic Civilizations, Palooka Machine, Corporate Machine.
That's all you?
Yep.
Wow. Has there ever been a point at which you yourself or a loved one or whatever has said, why don't you stop doing that part of the job?
No.
Just run the business. I mean, couldn't you at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. Computer AI is pretty tricky. I mean, it's one of the most common things people bring up in your reviews is that the AI isn't any good. And I've been doing it for 15 years now, and so I have a reasonable understanding of how to write AI that's going to provide a good challenge without massively cheating against a player. And I like it. I really enjoy for me, I always design the AI. When I design a game, it's I'm considering, well, how will the AI be able to play this game as well?
So how do you test something? Because I know the Twilight of the Arnor pack has like an immense galaxy size. How, and I played a little bit around with it just to like see how big it was, and I was just thinking, how do you even test this thing?
I know. Well, that's where you have the public betas.
Ah.
That's Stardock's dirty little secret, right? We put out a, we have a longer gestation rate because we'll have an open beta and letting people pre-order the game. Then they can play it, and they'll tell us what things we need to balance or what things they don't like. And you know, I pretty much just hang on the forums reading what they say and trying to make a judgment on whether, okay, is that reasonable or is that, you know, are they crazy?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to implement what makes sense into the game. Because, yeah, with Twilight of the Arnor, with every race having its own technology tree, which means every race has its own planetary improvements, its own ships, and that was the problem. We didn't really think through the ramifications of giving every race its own tech tree, because they're like, oh, we'll just give every race its own tech tree. How hard can that be? That's not that hard. But it's the fact that everything, all the things your race gets are based on the tech tree. We had to go in and design literally hundreds of new planetary improvements, which meant new graphics for all of them, because you can't just go and reuse the same ones. That'd be lame.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you have any on-staff QA, or is it just pretty much you?
No, we have a QA department. Because remember, Stardock also has the non-game side of the company.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we already have a pretty serious QA side because of that. We do a lot of work with the OEMs and with Microsoft and stuff.
Well, I mean, do you have like a more of a in QA in terms of play balancing?
No, that's mostly beta and Austin on the games team in terms of what we like to do and stuff. I mean, if you have the guy doing the AI also doing the one, you know, putting in the numbers for stuff, it's usually not too hard to balance it reasonably well, especially if it's not multiplayer. I mean, if Galaxy were two, you know, there's no way we'd try to do a Twilight of the Arnor as a multiplayer game, because you imagine balancing 12. Imagine Civilization IV, if the Mongols and the and the Romans each had their own tech tree. You'd have so many complaints, like, what do you mean? Ironworking is way tougher than bone shaping.
Right. I mean, all they have are their disadvantages at the beginning of the match, right?
Right.
Which are fairly minor, really.
Exactly. Whereas here, their full 100-plus technology tree differences per race is crazy. A lot of writing, a lot
that
of typos.
That is crazy.
The worst part, actually, is fixing all the typos.
Really?
Yeah, because you have to go through hundreds of pages of text.
But if it's like typos of like alien technology, who the hell would know?
If you had
a third A.
So when you guys are doing the review, if you see a typo, just say that was a translation of from the native language.
Right.
Yes. How high on your priority list is typos in terms of bugs? Are they just so easy to fix if you see when you go fix it?
We take them fairly seriously because reviewers will bring them up.
Yes.
And so,
well, it's one thing we understand. A misspelled word is something that we,
as magazine people,
right.
Right.
How lazy. They didn't even fix that.
Yeah, we're just not real good with letters and numbers is our main problem.
I remember lurking, this is back to the playtesting and beta phase, I remember lurking on the Sins forums and seeing some people suggest things offhand, and then there'll be a post from one of the Frasers saying, oh yeah, we just changed that, just for, you know, and they pretty much acknowledge it was because you guys just now said that, and we were like, yeah, that's really cool. And then to me, that's like, whoa.
Yep.
I have power over what the developers are going to do, and that seems very strange to me.
Well, I mean, the idea is, the idea is you make a game, and here's the tricky part, you then sell it to people who want to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you make the people who buy your game happy, they are even more likely to buy your next game. So, you know, creating goodwill, and
to be some tricky work done there on your side of, like, weeding out, you know, the cranks.
Oh, well, most of the stuff we ignore. You know, because I'm a jerk, so I pretty much go, what are you talking about? Are you insane? You know, there's a lot of people who are mad about, and since the Solar Empire, you don't have turrets. The ships don't actually have little guns that point and shoot and have physics to them. And it's like, guys, do you want to have to require a dual core to play this game? Because the hardware requirements would be astronomical to do that. But there were still people who said it would be worth it. And it's like, well, clearly, we don't agree on that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff like that. And, of course, there's every time we do an update, there's plenty of people who think we've ruined the game. It's the end of the world because now it's completely balanced against whoever their race was or whatever their tactic was before.
Oh, yeah. You hear that for the next 900 years as you're patching anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. And we already have the next three updates still in the queue for going. So there'll be a lot of angst to spread out as the spring and summer come along.
Do you lose sleep over the angst?
No. We did
a
little.
Ever?
Yeah, in Glaxoizations, we would get really a little bit discouraged when we'd put out an update that we'd really worked hard on it. And it'd be like hundreds of features, and people would fixate on some piddly little thing. And there'd be 10 posts about how it's destroyed the game that because we did such and such, and it was something that doesn't even come up. Mm-hmm. But over time, you realize that you start noticing that's really like five or six people who are writing all the posts, and they just repeat it. But if you're just casually going through the forums, you go, wow, there's a lot of people who hate such and such.
Right.
And you realize, oh, it's the same guy.
It's the vocal minority.
Right. Repetitive vocal minority.
So you guys see yourself mainly as like the strategy house, or do you see yourself branching out?
I'd like to see us do an RPG. I mean, I'm dying for another Baldur's Gate or Planescape Torment. And so if BioWare or whoever doesn't make one pretty soon, we're going to look at starting getting into that area too, because I think there's a big demand for RPGs of that nature.
Did you play The Witcher this year?
Mm-mm.
You should check that out.
Witcher?
Mm-hmm. Well,
sounds good.
And now that it's been adequately patched, I think it's easier to recommend than it was at the beginning.
Who makes that?
Way back when I got stuck.
CD Projekt.
CD Projekt. That's J-E-K-T Project. They're a Polish group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm surprised, being a quarter to three regular, that you don't know of The Witcher.
No, I hadn't seen that. I mean, I've seen the name. I've seen names, but I didn't read through it.
So what are you playing right now, besides your own stuff? Do you have time to play anything else?
I still play Company of Heroes when I can. I like that game a lot. In terms of new stuff, we play a lot of Team Fortress internally, more than we should say, more I should admit to. And I have not played Peggle. I know you guys are into Peggle. But you wrote a column saying it'll destroy your life. And I'm like, well, that kind of advertisement, I think I'll get that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say that. I maybe I did.
Yeah, I think you did. I think the words were destroy your life. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Are you into puzzle games?
Not really.
Oh.
Well, then don't play Peggle.
I mean, or I'm safe, at least.
Yeah. Well, my point there was that, like, those games are like the kind of games that I play in between actual gaming. But then it turns out, in my own head, that's what I think I'm doing.
Right.
But then those are the games that I end up spending even more time on because of that just one more game thing. Because the games are so short, it's easy to just justify, I'll just do one more, I'll just do one more. And then the next thing you know, it's like 3.5 hours have gone by. So,
yeah, there's some Flash games I've spent way too much time. I'm trying to remember the game where Tower Defense. I've played, go ahead and try this game. And 6 hours later, I'm still playing it.
Mm-hmm. Audio Surf, have you tried that one yet?
I have only seen it. I have not got to play it. It's running at the office.
Good times.
Because we're about to add that one to Impulse this month. Yeah.
So let's talk about piracy.
All right.
Where are you with this whole thing? Because we've had, obviously, it got brought up at GDC. There's been a lot of articles recently online. We've had a few people on our podcast who've specifically brought that up as reasons for why they're discouraged with PC gaming. But it seems like your take on it is a little different.
Well, there's always been piracy, and it's getting worse because it's easier with BitTorrent. But the game industry needs to realize that it's not the only industry having to deal with this, and they should look at how other markets have dealt with it. Like, as Starlock makes the desktop enhancement software like Window Blinds and Object Desktop, and so there's always internally a little bit of impatience when you see game developers complain about piracy. It's like, well, welcome to the party, pal. We've been dealing with this for years. And too many game developers and publishers look at piracy, every pirated copy, every BitTorrented copy, as a lost sale, and that's just not the case. The question is how do you increase your sales of your game as opposed to worrying so much about piracy?
Why do you think it's not the case that those, that the BitTorrent copies equal a loss of sale?
Well, because most people who get BitTorrent just wouldn't have bought it anyway. As a practical matter, you can look at the NPD figures and say, well, are all these games going down the toilet in sales based on similar games in the past? And the answer is no, they aren't. They may have more players than they did, but they aren't making less sales in general than they were in the past.
But some people are arguing that, like, you know, the kind of person that would know how to use BitTorrent would also be the kind of person who this particular whatever hardcore PC game it is going to appeal to in the first place. So, in fact, maybe you have lost a sale here.
Well, it's hard to say because if someone doesn't tend to buy stuff, I don't tend to target them. Let me give you an example. I'm always being told, and we've been hearing this for years and years, that China is an emerging market for PC software. Well, that's great, but if I were to focus all of my attention on making a game for the Chinese market and it tanked because it was all pirated, if I were to go and start complaining about that, what do you think the reaction would be? Do you think everyone would go feel sorry for, poor Stardock, their game didn't sell in China? Or would they have said, well, duh, of course your game didn't sell in China. It's massive piracy over there. I mean, there are different demographics on the PC have different piracy rates. I mean, people like, I have to, at the risk of aging or setting our age up on a pedestal here, so to speak, but you and I play different types of games than, say, 17 or 18-year-olds do. Mm-hmm. But we're also more likely to buy our games than a 17 or 18-year-old is, too.
Right. Right. I remember I posted a blog about a month or so ago just about random stuff, and one of them was about music that I was listening to at the time, and I was... Have I talked about this in the podcast already?
Sound familiar.
I'm getting a deja vu feeling. Okay, maybe it's just my fever.
Oddly enough, this is something you haven't talked
about. Wow. Usually I repeat myself three or four times. But I was talking about new music new old music that I was discovering, and I was discovering it through not just iTunes, but also eMusic.com, which is a music service that offers pretty cheap downloads.
Right.
Right. And I wasn't particularly pimping that site. I was just saying, here's how I'm getting my music right now these days. And one of the private responses I got back was from some kid who was probably like a teenager who said, ha, 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 old man, hearing new music by buying it. Or something like that. But the implication being, I can't believe you're actually spending money on music.
Right.
That's what he was saying to me.
And see, what happens to those people is that in other markets, I mean, did you know that Adobe Photoshop gets pirated? I mean, in the game industry, that must come as a shock, apparently, because Adobe's doing okay despite piracy.
Massive piracy.
Right, despite massive piracy. And the reason is because Adobe's does not sweating some 17-year-old using Adobe Photoshop. But in the game industry, if Adobe ran itself like the game industry does, the professional graphics designers would have to have like a anal exam every time they wanted to run a Photoshop, because they're worried about the 17-year-old pirating their game.
Well, so what do you say to the developers and publishers who've come out, very vocally and angrily lately saying like, well, this is why we're not going to make PC games anymore, or this is why this game is sucking, this is why Call of Duty isn't doing well, it's because all these damn kids are pirating it.
Right, well, and the answer is you have to look at how many copies of these games sold historically. I mean, Call of Duty 4 is selling a gazillion times more on the consoles than on the PC platform. That's because on the console platform, I know it's going to work on my console perfectly without monkeying around with my hardware. I mean, these things have been talked about forever, but if I have an Xbox 360, I'm going to get Call of Duty on my Xbox 360 because it's definitely going to work. If I get it on my PC, it might work, might not. I might have problems with it. Who knows?
So are you saying that in that case, you would do that every time? That if there's a multi-platform title, the most part, you're going to default to getting the console version?
Yeah, if it's multi-platform, I'm generally getting the console version because, like Crysis, for example, Crysis wouldn't run on my machine, right? But if it's on the console, I know it's going to run right on that. Even Oblivion, I have Oblivion on the PC and on the console, on the 360. But when I get it for the console, there's no doubt about, I don't have to mess with anything. And that's where, but it, you know, you can't say that, oh, well, it's because, but then the publisher will try to say it's piracy that's doing that, which is, it's, that's absurd.
And interface issues don't come into play at all, because both Crysis and Oblivion, I find more enjoyable to play with a keyboard and mouse than I do with a controller in hand.
Well, in that, and in those cases, I didn't buy, I don't play, because I have to have my mouse on a first-person shooter, but on a game like Oblivion, it's fine on the console. You know, with the controller and all that.
Mm-hmm. So then maybe the answer for PC developers is to, or publisher, I mean, maybe the multi-platform thing is just something they, I don't want to say give up, because probably any sales are better than no sales, right?
Right. Well, they have to, they need to look at what demographic they're trying to chart or move towards. I mean, look at, I wrote the article and I was talking, I actually mentioned I had to cut your lawn, mow your lawn, I don't know if you saw that. Mm-hmm. But game magazines are cover things based on what their readers want to read. But game developers need to realize that the people reading the game magazines are not necessarily the game buyers. They're game players. So a game magazine should be focusing on, well, maybe focusing on a different set of games than what people who actually buy games actually play. So a Galactic Civilizations, for example, can sell 300,000 copies. But you wouldn't know that. You would think, oh, it's not a little niche game. It's like, well, it still sold 300,000 copies. Or Sins is, you know, at 200,000 copies in 45 days. Mm-hmm. And you have to target who actually buys games. It doesn't matter if there's a huge player base of it if they don't buy the game.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a little bit of the challenge that we're going through at the magazine as well. And it's something that we're debating with this notion that, you know, who is buying the magazine as opposed to who's reading it off the newsstand or who's just never seen it, never gonna see it because there's not that many copies out there. You know, the loyal subscribers are the ones who are mostly reading our magazine. And if that's the case, then maybe as a magazine, we can worry less about these quote-unquote AAA games as cover material and put a game that is AAA in the mindset of PC gamers who are likely to read our magazine. In other words, Sins of a Solar Empire might make a great magazine cover for games for Windows if you think of it just in terms of the people who actually read our magazine.
I don't know. I would probably put, I'd probably have World of Warcraft or Sims on every cover if I were,
wow.
If I were you.
Okay, well, there you go.
There you go.
You're the my other, boss. Yeah.
Is the other.
I'm sorry. Well, I mean, you don't remember, I'm the evil capitalist guy. Yeah. There would be a World of Warcraft
I was hoping
section.
For some encouragement here, Brad.
Oh, no. I want, you know, there should be Stardock stuff on every blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Stardock says, don't put Sins of a Solar Empire on the cover.
Yeah. Right. Because that's the easy way out, right? I mean, that we can look at those right. numbers, and we can determine that ourselves.
Right. I read your Sims. You had the Sims 3 covered it last in the current issue, right?
Yep.
Oh, that was an awesome article.
Thank you. Well, thanks, Sean Malone.
I want that game.
Sean Malone,
when do I get it? Where can I get Sims 3 now? I'm ready.
Ask Rod Humble.
Yeah. I mean, sure, we could look at newsstand data, and we could say, okay, exactly what you said. Let's put World of Warcraft and... And actually, really, it's really just World of Warcraft, not even The Sims.
Right, it really
we
is.
Could be World of Warcraft monthly,
right?
And we'll do well every single month.
Now, the question is where your bread and butter comes from. Is it subscribers, newsstand sales, or advertisers? And, you know, it's a delicate balance between the three.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
People just stop pirating our magazines and do a lot better.
Yeah, that's the big problem in magazine piracy.
Yeah. Well, you guys have the issue that, your magazine covers have the... They're not as attractive as they could be because the Games for Windows thing is gigantic on there.
Are you saying that's not attractive?
Well, I'm saying
it's your Windows logo.
Well, it's not so much the logos. It obscures a lot of your creativity with it getting it selling stronger at retail.
True, but have you seen the Sims 3 cover though? Because we sort of
that got my attention.
Did it? Okay, yeah. See well, it worked then.
We've
been playing with it. If you look at that cover again, you'll see that, you know, the sun is setting on that screenshot, and the sun is bleeding all the way through the logo.
Right, but if you look back at some of your older issues where it's basically like a white...
They were very compartmentalized.
Yes.
Yeah.
The game is in a little box inside of this field of white.
That's called contractual obligation.
Yeah. Yeah, I could tell you my own Games for Windows experience is getting the logo on our boxes, but that'd be a... Well,
what?
Please tell us.
Tell us.
It's quite an experience. I mean, it's been pretty good overall, but it's very stringent on if you want that Games for Windows logo on your box.
Yeah, because, you know, as a platform, you know, it's only the highest quality is allowed to be in Games for Windows, as we all know. Being overly sarcastic. So what kind of stringency was there for you?
We have to, the back of the box requires a huge requirements area. I mean, like a good third of the back of the box has to be dedicated to a very consistent format, which would normally have been given over to showing, like, I don't know, screenshots or explain what the game is. And then on the front, the Games for Windows thing is pretty big on the front too. I don't mind that one as much, but it, I mean, at various times it's tough. And then you have to get them the game months and months in advance to let them approve it and all this other stuff, which, I mean, we usually, like, Political Machine will not be a Games for Windows game because that game won't be done until like 20 minutes before it ships. So there won't be enough time to do that sort of thing.
I see.
What are they checking out when they've got it for that long of time? Is it
like, you have to, on how the installer works, my pet peeve is that on Windows Vista your game can only install to Games Explorer. You can't create your own icon, no more desktop icons, no start menu item, which I that really bugs me because the search in Windows Vista does not go through Games Explorer. So if I just installed Sins of a Solar Empire on Windows Vista, I have to remember. I have to know it's in Games Explorer to find it. Otherwise, forget it. You can't find it.
Well, aren't they just going to assume that you would assume that, right? Because here in Vista, we've organized our games all under Games Explorer.
No, except right. except for Microsoft's own, which aren't in Games Explorer.
Duh.
Yeah. So that's
so
one
for that theory.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's kind of annoying. And the game has to actually launch the program. The icon can only go to the program itself. It can't go to a launcher, which I think is a big bummer because a lot of games will come to a mini launcher first that lets you set your the video resolution and other stuff just in case, you know, something goes wrong. You can mess with it before you get into the game. Whereas if you're running at some low resolution monitor, you set the resolution beyond what it can handle. You go in a game, you can't get into it again. Now you're going to a text editor to try to find it. You can't have one of those mini launchers with Games for Windows.
Why? That's a weird rule.
It is. So those are the kinds of things that are a little maddening at times.
Yet there don't seem to be rules for, you know, mouse integration in the menu strings for console ports and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
this was...
Because since the Solar Empire has got the Games for Windows branding, but it has its own online service, Ironclad Online, did you ever even consider looking at GFW Live?
GFW Live?
Nice response.
You mean Windows Live?
Windows Live.
The Xbox Live version for PC.
Oh, no, because we like to give away... We want our stuff to be free. Mm. We like to give away free stuff, and they tend to... want to charge everything for that. Like, if you want to put out mini expansions or whatever, they
want to do.
They want to charge. Yeah.
Do they require specifically some level of gold service every time? Is that how it works? Or
yeah, I'm not sure on that. Yeah. I mean, we didn't really pursue it that much. Mm-hmm. I know, because I mean, we have our own thing. From our perspective, it's almost like a competitor what we're doing.
Right.
So we'd rather have everyone using Stardock's system, the upcoming Impulse for that sort of stuff.
So what would it take for Political Machine 2008 to have the Games for Windows logo on it? Like, why is it? Is it just, it's just the timing thing?
The timing is the biggest thing for sure on that. It's basically the overhead of having to go through the process.
Now, did you feel that it was ultimately worth it? Did it make a difference to have it on Sins?
Overall, we had a very positive experience. It's just, if you have enough lead time, it's definitely worth doing. Because first of all, there was that ad thing that was in Games for Windows Magazine. That was very nice to have. Two, they promoted us on a lot of Games for Windows. The program promoted us in a lot of different areas, which was really helpful. Hmm. And it helped at retail in some cases, like with Walmart and other places.
In terms of what? Just getting in the door?
Not so much getting in the door, but getting them to promote it even stronger than they would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it can be a force for good.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
So you brought us Impulse a couple times. So Explain impulse.
All right. Well, a long time ago, their Stardock started out in the late 90s doing digital distribution on its non-game stuff with Object Desktop and window blinds. And then when we started getting back into the games on Windows, we made this thing called TotalGaming.net.
Yep.
And we put our games onto that. And then that was doing well enough that some indie developers came to us and asked us, well, can we put our game on this? And we let them, but we didn't really care if they did or not because it was a hassle. Mm-hmm. But they're all separate thing. Well, you know, I mean, we always, here's how galactically wrong I was about how digital distribution would work. I always envisioned that every single publisher would have their own digital distribution network. So you would have, EA would have one, and Ubisoft would have one, and Take-Two would have one, and everyone, every single publisher would have one. So we didn't really see the reason to go and put a lot of effort trying to get other people into ours, because we figured they'd all get their own anyway. Then one day this thing called Steam comes out.
Yes.
And we looked at them like, huh, Steam, you know, that's really cool. And we were really excited because we love Valve and all their games and stuff. And then they started getting other people's games on there. I went, huh. You know, I'm like, whoa, they must be nuts. Because, you know, don't they know that all these guys are destined to come up with their own system? I mean, no, why would they put their – isn't Valve their competitor? Why would they put their stuff on a Steam? And then one day when we launched Sins of the Solar Empire, users start coming to us and saying, you need to put your game on Steam or I won't buy it. And that freaked us out a little bit. It freaked us out a lot. So we said, well, you know what? We need to – we're going to have to start taking this a lot more seriously or we're going to lose control. I don't want to – it's bad enough dealing with Walmart at retail. I don't want a digital version of Walmart to emerge on the game site, even if, you know, we like Valve and that. So,
I mean, what it would mean, the downside for that – for that is that they would get a piece of it, right?
Right. They would be, I mean, a 30%, even though they're pretty generous in their royalties, but it's still a pretty good chunk. And we've been doing this. I mean, Steam we had been doing this for years before Steam arrived. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, well, why would we give up all this when we already have our own system? So what we've done is we've taken all of our various networks and we're combining them into a single platform, which is called Impulse, that comes out later this month. And so then we're taking our biz dev team that traditionally has been working with on our non-game stuff, and we're working on getting all the major publishers on the games and non-games, so applications, utilities, antivirus, you name it, and letting people put their stuff right onto Impulse. So eventually people will be able to actually submit their stuff directly onto it and get their updates and manage everything right from one program.
Mm-hmm. You guys definitely have an advantage just in terms of that, like you've said, you have been around before. I think it's certainly been known amongst Stardock fans that you've had this ability. But I wonder, like, you know, are you concerned at all now with Impulse that, like, now you're, like, playing catch-up to these guys who came along and stole all this thunder? I mean, is it going to be hard in your eyes to compete?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, you're going to have people who are going to go, hey, isn't this like Steam? And it'll be sort of like when people used to say our software on one of our desktop enhancements was like Confabulary, even though we've been doing widgets for years before Confabulary came out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we've been doing this since 99. It's just we aren't as famous at it. But we figure our goal isn't to make Steam go away. Our goal is to make sure that there's a viable alternative to Steam so that people can, you know, that there's more choice out there on the market. For example, we're going to build things into Impulse that we think will change the way the game industry goes. For example, we want to integrate persistent worlds into Impulse so that if you're a game developer and you want to have your game have a persistent monthly world where you could have a subscription, optional subscription, you could do that, or to support mini expansion packs. But anything that allows people who are really into their game to keep being able to get content and encourages the developer to keep making this content. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot. I think that if you have more than just one company doing this, you see a lot more innovation occur, and that's good for everyone.
Of course.
So, I mean, obviously the challenge for us is between now and the end of the year, we have to pull on all the content, right? We can have all kinds of cool tech, but if you can't get, you know, Supreme Commander or whatever on Impulse, then that's not going to do you any good.
So is there any reason you wouldn't see a game on both Steam and Impulse, like Supreme Commander, or is there some sort of exclusivity built?
Only if a particular deal is exclusive. I mean, there's some things that are exclusive onto Steam. I mean, I don't think you're going to see Half-Life on Impulse,
right?
Real soon. I'm going to go out on a limb and make that prediction.
Okay.
All right. I'm a really crazy guy. And similarly, you probably won't see Sins of a Solar Empire on Steam anytime soon And I mean, one advantage Stardock does have is that we are also a retail publisher. So as we get a growing number of pretty major developers coming to us wanting us to publish their games, not just digitally, but at retail, just instead of going to EA or 2K Games, they're coming to us now as well. That we can, that gives us an instant level of content that's mm-hmm. advantage.
So are you going to have? Because I remember when I bought Gal Civ 2, I downloaded it digitally, and then also had the option to have a retail copy shipped to me, and I did that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I did that because I like having a retail copy. Are you going to be doing something like that with all the games on Impulse or no?
It depends on the game. I'd like to see it where you can literally do a checkbox mm-hmm. and you can download the game and just have it shipped to you. Almost like, Amazon should be doing with that Kindle thing where you can, buy the Kindle version and get the book shipped to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that how they're doing it now?
They're not doing it yet. That's how they should be doing it.
Oh, I see.
I mean, that would make it
a lot more appealing.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're just going to do that. We're going to do what we wish Amazon.com would do with Kindle with games. But it's not just games. It is your utilities and everything else. And we have a lot of relationships with the OEMs and that we're trying to build upon. So we're putting together affiliate programs to make it easier for people to sell games using Impulse as their service.
And you have like a... Because Valve announced Steamworks recently,
Yeah.
The way... For the developers to directly track everything themselves. Do you have something like that in the works too?
Yeah, we do. That is a good start, having it where people can track who's playing their game and how many users. But having services like matchmaking, everyone knows how fun matchmaking services tend to be in these games. They almost never work, right? It seems like. But if we can build a matchmaking service that's basically bulletproof, works amongst a couple of different games, here's something that third parties can make use of. Because like you guys have said in the past, I mean, like Valve's pretty much owns that first-person shooter experience. I mean, Half-Life and Team Fortress. I think Stardock is emerging as certainly one of the leading strategy game publishers and developers. So what are the kinds of things that strategy gamers want in their games? They want good matchmaking for setting up a game. They want potentially a persistent server where their characters and their stats are kept on for whatever empires they're building. And those are the kinds of things we can build into Impulse that developers will be able to leverage over time.
So how big a deal is the social connection stuff to you? Because the appeal of something like Steam or even GFW Live, if it had caught on, was, especially when Steam announced the community features, was, okay, finally, there's going to be this one unified place, this one friends list.
Right.
That I only need one. I can get rid of all these other things that I've been using, all the disparate, chat servers and Xfire and all the other stuff. So
I don't think people are going to be getting rid of, I use the community features on Steam too, but I'm not about to get rid of Xfire or Instant Messenger or anything like that anyway. I mean, yeah, that's what they invented Trillion for. So
you don't think there's this unified, awesome future?
I don't think gamers want a unified. I mean, no matter how much we like Valve or how much people like Stardock, I don't think anyone out there wants them to be the only ones to do that sort of thing. I mean, besides, it creates an opening for third parties to create stuff that talks between the two. I mean, that's what typically happens.
Mm-hmm. So you're the trust buster.
Right. Well, I'm just paranoid. I like to have options on. I don't want it, no matter how much I like. It's sort of like Google, right? I like Google as a search engine, but boy, am I glad there's still Yahoo and other people out there to keep them honest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it, probably in a nutshell, that's a huge part of the Windows Live thing.
Yeah,
it's a problem right there.
Yeah,
I think you're hitting the nail on the head there.
Right.
Yeah, because you don't want, pretty soon, if you only have one vendor, pretty soon they can start charging you for all kinds of stuff. And they can say, it'll be like on South Park, that one episode. So what are you going to do? Huh? What are you going to do?
Yep. I mean, yeah, you even see that with Xbox Live. And even like their little indie developer.
Didn't Microsoft just change the royalty rate dramatically too?
Yeah, they
drop it, especially for the XNA games. I think they dropped it way lower.
Yeah.
It's been a big source of contention. Like, some people are just saying, I was going to develop games for Xbox Live. No, I'm not. I'm just,
right.
Period. I am not going to. So that's the danger there.
Exactly. So, I mean, the PC game industry, if it wants to keep generating revenue and, you know, become more healthy, it's going to have to evolve. And I think one of the ways to evolve is to, it isn't either just become a subscription network like an MMO or cross-platform or consoles, but there are other ways. Allow people who really like your game to keep being able to play your game and be able to generate revenue from that in a way that benefits the player. And I think that these platforms, whether it be Impulse or Steam or what have you, are going to have to keep adding these kinds of features to allow developers to do this sort of thing without bringing on the associated costs,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Does it make sense, Ryan?
No. Right. Yes.
This is the point usually where the guest says, what does Ryan do?
Oh, yeah. Huh.
How come he's here?
I'm quiet.
He has a nice shirt today.
He does have a nice shirt today.
It is. I like the green shirt. And green pants.
Keep talking about my green shirt.
It's just very green.
So everybody can see.
Yeah. Have we hit our expiration time? How are we doing?
Let me see what you're using here.
You want to look at our equipment?
That's like,
just garage.
Don't go behind the scenes there, man.
Yeah.
You're like breaking the wall there.
Just
what does this button do?
Nothing fancy.
Oh, okay. Then we had, our setup for PowerUser TV wasn't quite this fancy. We had a mixer and we were using Adobe something or other for.
We got nothing but the best here at Ziff Davis. We got
foam walls.
Yeah, we got these foam walls that look like they're sort of like the inside of like eggshell cases. Mm-hmm. And they probably are. We got about 8 broken chairs in here. 4 functioning sets of mics.
About, let's see, 6 dozen dials. I don't know what they do.
We have a clock in here now. That's new. See that clock?
But there's
there.
No tequila shots in here. We always had tequila on the set when we did.
You're on the wrong podcast.
One
for
Up
that.
Yours does.
Yeah, you want to be on One Up Yours for that. We keep it straight and clean here at GFW.
Ah.
Right, Ryan?
Yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah.
That's what that first half of the show was.
We're a caffeine-fueled... Well, I didn't say that we're... yeah. I mean, we're disgusting and profane, but we do it in total sobriety. We don't need drugs to bring us to that place. Are we done?
Wait, hold on. Wait.
What?
I got a question for you.
All right.
Do you watch Lost?
God,
I watched the the 5-minute summary YouTube video of Lost, but I haven't watched every episode.
Oh, okay.
Aww. Oh, thank God.
Never mind.
So usually, yes.
Usually, at this point in the podcast, we have a Lost discussion.
Oh,
to conclude. But yeah,
we'll it's nice.
But thank
we'll
you for sparing
week.
Us that. Oh, do you have new theories now?
I don't know.
Has there been a podcast since the Michael episode? Because since I was out, I don't know. Has there been one or no?
No.
Like a GFW?
Yeah.
We talked about
the Michael episode?
We devolved into Lost.
Oh, yeah, Time Bullets.
Yeah,
was that during the one I was out?
Yeah, during the podcast that wasn't a podcast. Yeah, you also listen.
We're not going to do that now, though.
Brad, okay. You can take your headset off.
No, we're done.
We're apparently done with you.
We're not Lost casting now.
No, we're done.
And what's next? Battlestar Galactica's coming.
Oh, yeah, it is this Friday, right?
Is it? That's this Friday? Oh, no, I'll be on an airplane. That's not fair.
Sci-Fi Channel repeats everything 20 times.
They do a really stupid thing with their DVDs because I just finished like season 2 and like season 3 just came out right before season 4.
Yeah.
There's not enough time to watch it.
No, they all do that.
That's
you
stupid.
Know who else did that recently was Project Runway. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say it. That's a little bit embarrassing.
You watch Project Runway?
Let me put the disclaimer in again. I live with 2 women.
You don't need a disclaimer, Jeff.
But, you know, I wanted to watch... Huh? Oh,
I was going to say, what is it? What else do you watch? Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. There's a bunch of ones in there. But I also watch guy-sanctioned shows like Battlestar Galactica. So I have a little bit of credibility
You're well-balanced.
I'm well-balenced that way.
I watch Smallville. I admit... I watched
it at the beginning, but I sort of have a problem with Superman, so I could never.
You have
really...
a problem with Superman?
What?
I have a problem with Smallville, but not Superman.
What's your problem with Superman?
What are you, a communist?
He's too perfect. He's boring. There's.
Well, maybe you should watch Smallville.
Those are the bad Superman stories.
Yeah.
Those are the bad Superman stories.
Everything about him. He just looks stupid. Everything about him. I just want to hit him.
You don't want to do that.
I'll take Batman any day.
I prefer
Batman. See, I can't hit him. It's another problem.
So well,
you could. It would hurt your hand.
Hurt too perfect, and you can't hit him.
Yeah. I'm trying to get excited about Battlestar, but that's season 3. I don't know.
Don't spoil it.
Oh, you guys aren't caught up.
Like I said, I haven't been able to watch 3 yet.
Everyone's
I say skip 3.
No!
I've never watched Battlestar.
All I know is I see...
Dude.
That's what I'm hearing from everybody.
That's a huge hole in your geek cred. You've got to get caught
up. I'm very confused because I know certain things happened in the plot that I didn't want to know happen, involving one particular character who went on Bionic Woman. But then... Now I see ads and she's in it again.
Well, I guess they've kind of decided that that's not a spoiler anymore.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. I thought... But
no, she's like on the new Entertainment Weekly as a big Battlestar. You know, it's coming back this week. And they've got her the cover. Not the cover, but the main story big image on a full page. It's like, oh, okay. I guess it's not a secret that she's not dead.
She's not dead.
Or something. I mean, obviously.
Right.
Her show got canceled.
She's probably a Cylon.
Well, right.
Everyone's a Cylon.
Or she's a god. See, with this show, she could be anything. That's why. Well, whatever. We'll save this rant for
some time. You already said something. I'm like, huh? I don't want to know what that means. I almost asked you to define God, but I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good show.
Now we're done?
We're done.
Thanks, Ryan. Thank you, Brad, for being here for our 100th podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's so exciting. We're done.
100.
We'll be back next week with 101. Goodbye.